All right, let's hop into it.
All right, ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
Okay, I'm Will.
I'm Chad.
This is Two Man Congress.
All right, let's go.
Perfect. So today we're going to be talking about social media censorship and whether or not social media has the right to censor material that is on their platform. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get into some definitions before we really hop into the juicy details of all the cases. And so there are four definitions that we want to talk about: social media, censorship, political content, and mm-hmm. government entanglement. So social media is really just a platform where people can post images, material, statements, so that they can share and connect with other people. And censorship is really where you restrict any of those images, material, or content so that people are not able to share that with other people.
Precisely. And then with the government entanglement, we typically see that with church and state mixing together. This is also applicable when it comes to either social media or corporations that are involved in the government. And also, moving on to defining political content, political is defined as when individuals seek to influence certain policies through either like networking,
elections.
Yeah, or elections or really anything like that. And then content is just kind of like what we're doing. We're just providing information. So it's just providing those policies to other people.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So, Chad, what kind of experiences have you had with censorship on social media platforms?
All right. So for me, I served a LDS mission. And when COVID first hit, we were switching how missionary work was done. We weren't knocking doors as much. We're honestly just trying to figure out how social media worked. For one, I wasn't very literate when it came to social media. I was just I'd occasionally post the occasional like prom date kind of thing. And anyways, so when we were trying to get our channel up or our page, we kept getting it shut down because of spam. Not that we had a ton of them coming up, but it was just really interesting to have it shut down three consecutive times, being the fastest growing page in my mission at the time, with well over like 1,000 or 2,000 people within like 2 to 3 weeks. Like, it was growing really fast. Mm-hmm. And then it kept getting shut down because the name wasn't right and Facebook thought it was too spammy, so they'd shut it down. So that's one example of censorship that I've seen. There's also when you see, like, friends post, like, gory images of, someone broke their arm and their bone's sticking out. Like, well, so yeah. Facebook will censor that. Like, that's a form of what most of us would say, well, I'm happy that they censored that.
And actually, this is really where the debate starts to form a little bit, is because Facebook has the right to censor spam. They have mm-hmm. the right to censor any obscene material or any hateful speech or things like that. The reason why this is a debate is because Facebook appears to censor, and other social media, I should say, as well, appear to censor political information as well. And the reason why this is an issue is because a lot of people feel like this information may influence things like elections or policies that are mm-hmm. in government. And so that's why this is a debate. So the debate is whether or not there is censorship going on. And it's an important concept because this information may influence political discussions.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a few examples of when government has gotten involved with censoring Facebook. The one that I was looking at earlier was in Vietnam in 2020. The Washington Post did about it back in October of this year. And basically what it was is the Communist Party at the time wasn't happy with some of the locals posting negative things about the party and on Facebook. So the communist leader at the time threatened to take Facebook down unless Facebook censored those kind of political ideas. And Facebook receives close to $1 billion in revenue from Vietnam, according to a 2018 report that was done. So Facebook cut their losses and decided to censor the speech in Vietnam on their platform there in order to preserve Facebook.
And so really the reason why we're bringing that up is because it shows that Facebook and other social media platforms can be influenced by governmental actions. And currently in the United States, we have times where Zuckerberg or Dorsey has appeared between Congress to testify. And a lot of these issues deal with Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chad, do you want to explain just a little bit more about what those sections protect?
What it talks about.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll just try to explain it in layman terms as much as possible. So what it talks about is basically if you as a user post something and someone else does that thing, the company is not liable for that action. So say if I, for an example, this is probably a gory example, but say if I say I don't like puppies, puppies should die or something like that, and someone goes out there and they start killing a bunch of puppies, Facebook as a company is not liable for that crime. And that's basically what the Section 230 talks about, is to preserve basically companies that are based on the internet, and it kind of lines all that out, and you could look that up online and look it at yourself.
The actual term language written in the section says, "No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider." So that's exactly what Chad was just saying, except that's the legal terms for it. The other thing that's important to note is that social media has the ability to censor information without having any fear of lawsuits in that mm-hmm. regard as well. So they can censor information, certain information, without the fear of being sued for that censorship.
All right. So to kind of get into our debate, that's kind of what we'll be talking about. Section 230 will probably be a big factor in how the debate will go, seeing how that's part of like U.S. law. The one thing that I actually thought that was pretty interesting is that in Section 230, it like outlines all the laws that it would affect and how they don't affect them and that kind of stuff. So Section 230 doesn't fall on under content that incites like sexual trafficking or like state laws. It doesn't affect state laws. So if state laws decide that they don't want a certain kind of content, Section 230 doesn't cover that. And a few other things mm-hmm. that we could get into when the debate gets going.
So this debate is going to be specifically about whether or not social media has the right to restrict political information. There's an argument for hateful speech and obscene material, but we're going to focus specifically on political information, whether or not that material can be censored by social media or should be censored by social media, because currently with the legal legislation that we have, it can be. So that's something that we're going to debate and provide any potential policy implications afterwards. Before the debate, we're going to follow the Lincoln-Douglas style, except we're going to do a modified version. Originally, the Lincoln-Douglas style is like a 45-minute debate in and of itself, but we don't want you to get bored.
Yeah, it's pretty long.
So we're going to do a modified version where we cut the speaking time in half. So each speaker is going to get about 8 minutes, and the total speaking time is going to be about 16 minutes for the debate. And that'll give us a chance to present the arguments. The other side will have an opportunity to cross-examine those arguments and then present their own arguments. And this will go on so forth to where the affirmative speaks, the cross-examination happens for the negative speech speaks, and then the affirmative will provide their cross-examination, and then the affirmative will give the rebuttal, the negative will give the rebuttal and summary, and then the affirmative will give their summary. The way that we'll do this, we'll just time each other.
Yeah.
And give each other like a 10-second notification, and then we'll flip a coin to see who has what.
Sweet. Sounds great. So now also for viewers out there, if you are interested in seeing other forms of debate, this is just the form of debate where we think would actually probably just be the funnest one. But if you have other suggestions, like, please let us know, whether in the comments or you could email us as well.
We'll be happy to experiment with other forms.
Yeah, so we don't have a problem with that. Anyways, so we'll just hurry and hop into it, and we'll see you in a sec.
Awesome. You ready for this?
Yep, ready for it.
Okay. Heads is the affirmative. Tails is the affirmative. You'll be heads, I'll be tails, and whichever one it lands on gets the affirmative argument. Ready?
All right. There we go. Heads, look at that.
Awesome. Okay.
Sweet. So let's hop into it. I'll have about 5 seconds to prepare my thoughts. And
I'll start the timer as soon as you start talking.
All right. And go. So in today's argument for the affirmative, I'll be arguing why social media needs to be reined in and regulated to prevent misuse of media. And to begin with, I'd like to present the argument of harmful content and how it will hurt the population. The study I'd like to bring up is when Facebook did a study about how social media was affecting kids in school and how that was affecting them mentally and emotionally at the time of the study. And we've seen it all throughout life, I'm sure. You as a listener have seen at some point a picture that made you feel jealous and all that stuff. That's not what I'm arguing, that that needs to be censored. But in regards to political censorship, there is information out there that will incite violence. And my example I'd like to share is from January 6th regarding false information about the election and how that caused riots at the Capitol in D.C. And it is the job of platforms to censor certain content that explicitly lies about important information regarding the public, whether that is health, crime, international issues, etc. And going on with that, we should also not be allowing certain speakers such as the KKK or other discriminated organizations to desire to harm a particular people based upon race or religion. My favorite example that will hit home, hopefully, to a few listeners, is when the destruction of the Nauvoo I can't remember the name of it right now. It was a popular newspaper in Nauvoo, and leaders of the community at the time decided that that newspaper had to be shut down because it was going to put the people in the area in danger due to lies that had been spread by the newspaper previously. So to kind of recap, media has power that can influence either elections or other certain political items. So it's very important that we control what is allowed and not allowed on our social media platforms. So not to incite violence.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, perfect. I'll go ahead and ask you a minute and a half worth of questions. Mm-hmm. My first question is really, where is the line? What information is considered harmful?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So typically what will be defined as harmful information is information that will incite violence, provoke people into doing something that will harm other people. Like, say, if I were to say on social media, everyone out there should go, this is just a little vulgar example, but everyone out there should go kill Japanese dogs. Like, they're really bad. Everyone should go do it. If those people are, if there's people that go out and kill those puppies because that one person.
So just inciting violence is considered harmful. Okay. So what about political information?
So my personal favorite one is using the January 6th incident where there were lies about the, like maybe not necessarily lies, but information that incited people to go do something violent based upon political information.
How far can you censor political information? What's the limit there?
Limit there? It's really gray, kind of like the law. So I think where it should end is when it incites kind of like the KKK where okay, discrimination.
As well. All right. Okay, perfect. So I now had the opportunity to give mine. Do you want to time me for 3.5 minutes?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
When you are.
Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As the negation, I am arguing that social media platforms are overstepping their bounds by restricting that kind of information. And I have three goals that I want to kind of share here as I lay out my argument. The first goal is to say that social media platforms are overstepping their interest by regulating political speech. And then I also want to discuss how government entanglement causes social media companies to act kind of as an arm of the government. And then third, I want to talk about how social media censorship should be treated as if the government itself was directing the censorship because of that government entanglement. And that means that they need to abide by the First Amendment as well. So Chad mentioned a whole bunch of speeches that may be considered harmful. Of those are obscene material, hateful material, discriminatory material, and even political material. I think government itself also has a responsibility to regulate some of that material, specifically obscene material. And government does regulate obscene material. We see that in Miller versus California. But I am also arguing that they are overstepping their interest by regulating political information specifically. And part of that is because social media platforms often have an agenda, just like government has an agenda. And they will censor political speech that they don't necessarily agree with. You see this with Twitter accounts that have been banned, Trump's account that was banned, the New York Post Hunter Biden account that was banned, so that article couldn't go there. And what it does is that it influences elections. Now, we really have to say that government and social media are part of the same thing in order for this argument to actually stick. And we can see that in some of the things that are shared. We see Jen Psaki saying, "We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation, and they're working with people to get certain content out there. As a result, if Facebook goes ahead and censors that information, they are acting as an agent to the White House. If that's the case, then Facebook or social media platforms could be considered parts of the government." If that is the case, then they then should be regulated by the First Amendment, meaning that they can't censor certain protections in those things. Like, for example, obscene material is protected. That's fine. Social media can continue to do that. But the government cannot decide what information is or is not put out there. You see that in Cox Broadcasting Corporation and in the Miami Herald versus Tornillo.
There we go. A little 10 seconds over, but that's totally fine. So we'll go into the cross-examination for the affirmative, and that will be about a minute and 30 seconds, and I'll get started with that. So to start with, besides the Jen Psaki quote, what evidence is there of government controlling what social media censors?
So currently, it's all circumstantial.
Yeah.
We see...
Explain, sorry.
We see Facebook censoring things like COVID-19 related materials that are posted by conservative outlets or things like that. But you don't have a direct line to say that the government, that Facebook is doing it because the government is telling them to do it.
All right.
Besides the Jen Psaki quote, of course.
All right. And just to clarify, that's for the Jen Psaki quote and all that stuff, it's just with that quote is the only one that you could come up with.
At the moment, yes.
Yes. All right. And let's see. What evidence is there of social media engaging with those requests?
Like I just said, we see circumstantial evidence. Mm-hmm. It's not directly tied to the government, but you do see those platforms regulating things like conservative outlets, which, since there is a Democratic administration in the office right now, you would expect to see that.
All right. And that concludes my cross-examination.
All right, perfect. You have 2 minutes. Go ahead and start sharing your rebuttal. All
right. So my good friend, Will, my brother, he shared a cool quote about Jen Psaki that she shared a little bit ago, talking about how he was trying to make the claim that Facebook is an arm of the government, and based upon that being like the only quote that he could come up with or anything else related to that, I'm just going to say that that's probably just a quote taken out of context. Nah, just kidding. Anyways, so I would just like to reiterate my statements I made earlier that that although it's important to preserve like free speech, these media companies are its own company, and they're their own private sector, and they have the option to choose what they allow on their platform and what they choose not to allow, and that harmful content will hurt people. We've seen it in reports on suicide, media, all that stuff. And we've also seen that that as platforms and media choose to like censor certain content, it could help out with those tendencies to suicide, especially with young people and how we've had that epidemic happening. And to conclude, I would just like to say that
time.
All right, sorry.
Alrighty, going into my rebuttal, I have 3 minutes if you want to start timing me.
Yep, I got you.
All right, perfect. In regard to the question that Chad asked and then mentioned in his rebuttal, that quote was not taken out of context. She was asked that specifically, whether or not she was censoring media that was on Facebook, and that was her direct response. As far as Chad's comments and what he shares, I want to discuss how he really focused on harmful material and what may be harmful material. And yes, government itself has an interest in regulating harmful material that is obscene. For example, in Miller versus California, obscene material is not protected by the First Amendment. That is in several Supreme Court cases. But I'm talking specifically about political information that is being censored by social media companies. And as a result of this information being censored, it is influencing elections and it is having these issues harmful by this censorship. So even if it's out of good faith, it could actually have a negative impact that Chad is mentioning. Additionally, Chad did not discuss the government entanglement. He only attacked the Jen Psaki quote, but he did not allude at all that government entanglement is not happening. And he did not refute the arguments of other outlets being censored by social media companies. That tends to benefit only one party. As a result, social media should be regulated in the sense to where it cannot censor certain information.
Sweet. Thank you, William. And let's see, that concludes that part of the debate.
You have a minute and a half to finish up.
Closing arguments, right? All right.
I'll start the timer when you're ready.
All right.
Once you start talking, that is.
Okay. So I got a minute and a half for summary. All right, sweet. So to just go over my points, harmful information is harmful information. Anyways, so we've seen that although it is important for us to preserve like free speech and all that stuff, it does not apply to the private sector of social media, and there is no proof that the government actively influences what the American government actively influences what Facebook can and cannot do. And once again, just going back to January 6th and that incident of false information or the spread of information that led to this incident, of rioting at the White at Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. It's important to censor that. That goes like both ways. Censor certain speech that incites violence. And that concludes my argument.
Awesome. All right, Ted. So, great debate. We hope everyone else enjoyed it. Before we move on, is there any other information that you just wish that you put out there? Or any sources you wanted to reference that you just didn't have the time to talk about?
Yeah. So, one of the sources that I wanted to talk about in the debate, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the suicide rates regarding social media and how that affects young people.
You did bring that up quite a lot.
Yeah, but I wanted to bring up a little bit more stats on that, more information. I wish I would have brought up a little bit more about what led to January 6th and the tweets or the posts on Facebook that led people to gathering at Washington, D.C. to protest and what led them to eventually rioting later on. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit more about discrimination. Just wish I would have talked a little bit more on the points that I had prepared.
If there were any other things that I would have wanted to bring up, it would have been about Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, and just mentioning the two restrictions, or the two protections for social media companies. And then I also would have wanted to expound more on the Supreme Court cases that I looked up, specifically Lochner versus New York. I talked quite a bit about Miller versus California, but I also wanted to discuss Cox Broadcasting Corporation versus Kahn and the Miami Herald versus Tornillo and more. And I just didn't have the time to go over that. But if you, the listener, want to go over those things more, we could just leave notes both on the website and in the show notes listing where you can find that information and how it might be influential in a debate like this, and specifically what parts of those things that we would have highlighted in the debate. All right, you ready to move on?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, well, let's go for it. Okay, well, if you want to support us, you can support us on patreon.com/twomancongress. And that's spelled out TWOMANCONGRESS. Yeah, so if you like what you do, what we do, just go ahead on to Patreon and give us a look and help us out.
I honestly, I promise you, you'll seriously love it. Like, when it comes down to it, if you really like the content and you really want it to last, just donate like maybe like a buck helps. It could even be 25 cents. Hopefully it's more than that, but no, just kidding.
Well, we're just here asking for money.
No, I'm not begging. I just wish.
But honestly, the reason why we're able to do this is because of you. And we want to make this the best that we can specifically for you. Even though we're new at this, we're trying to figure it out. And your suggestions will help a lot, and your support will keep us motivated and to keep putting out this content that we feel is and will continue to be beneficial to you guys.
So if you want to see more content like this in the future, please subscribe. Follow us on either on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to support us, once again, Patreon's awesome. I love it.
That's patreon.com/twomancongress.
Let's talk about implications and summary.
Yep.
All right. So, consequences of certain legislation on Section 230, the Communications Decency Act.
Yep. So before we go over those consequences, do you just want to summarize what Section 230 protects, those two things that it protects?
Yeah, so it primarily protects what social media companies can allow on their social media platforms without being liable. I think that's the main one. And what was the other one again?
So, yeah, so what they decide to censor without being liable and what other people say without being liable. So those are their two protections. And so you can go ahead and talk about the consequences now of that legislation.
All right, so potentially politically influenced information, regardless of fact or not, because sometimes censored information turns out to be fact, is being regarded as irrelevant, even if it is relevant.
Yeah. So that's probably the biggest one, is just things that may be relevant are being treated as if it's irrelevant because it was censored. The other thing that's really a big consequence of this is restricting political information specifically may actually influence political results, which that means that social media may have a greater say in what happens politically than even you might have politically.
Yeah. And I think we just kind of look at different examples of like censorship, what is prioritized over other things. Like you brought up the Hunter Biden story earlier and how that was viewed as misinformation and censored until after the 2020 election versus the whole Russia collusion
a story with Trump that lasted for about 3 years and later was proven as not a whole lot going for it.
Mm-hmm. And that's debatable. There are some things that may have been proven and other things that weren't proven as well. But with this legislation in mind, Chad and I, we actually have a couple of suggestions, and this does not by any means mean that this is what we believe the government should do. It's just something that we thought may be helpful. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it could end up very harmful. We don't know because this isn't part of legislation. But we do have some policy ideas that may that we think would be interesting to see in effect. And we think that this has some consequences, good and bad, that may be beneficial. So first of all, we believe that social media should maintain the right to not be liable for things that other people post on their platforms. For instance, mentioning the January 6th riot, social media is not, Facebook is not responsible for January 6th, even though people organized it on their platform. So they remain not liable. That's the first part. The second part is that social media companies should continue to be given the right to restrict speech if it deems it as like obscene material or things like that. Because as I mentioned in the debate with the case of, I believe it was Miller versus, yeah, Miller versus California, the government has the right to restrict obscene material because it's not considered protected First Amendment speech.
Mm-hmm.
And so social media companies should still be given the ability to restrict things like that. But the third part of it is if they restrict political information acting as like an arm of the government, then that speech is considered protected speech and can't be censored. Does that make sense? In other words, they would be liable for a speech that they censored that is considered something like political speech.
Yeah. And if you guys have like any comments in the comment section, just talk about it. Be cordial. Didn't say that very well. But anyways.
So, Chad, what do you think are some of the pros of that suggestion?
So one of the pros I would say would be political information is considered protected speech even in the private private forums.
Yeah.
And then like social media is also removed of the burden of being associated with censorship on a government's behalf.
And really what that just means is, I mean, they don't need to worry about government influencing them to do things that they may feel in favor or opposed of. They're just free of that liability there. There are some cons, though. There's the potential that political information is going to be spammed because that's something that Facebook will censor as spam. And there's also not a clear definition of what political information is, and so it's going to be really hard to draw that line. And then once you do make companies liable for censoring material, how do you enforce that liability? And obviously, yes, suing, but other than that, what punishment should be in place for violating that censorship requirement? And then there's also the possibility of conspiracy theories becoming more prevalent because a lot of conspiracies are entrenched in political values and beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Sweet. And if you guys want to talk a little bit more about like further legislation regarding this topic,
like how to address the cons,
mm-hmm.
or if you have any other suggestions,
yeah, or if you want to talk about pros, like hey, we're all good with that. So yeah, just mention that in the comments below, and we'll listen to it. Maybe we'll bring it up later in another episode.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of what I feel is the most important part of the episode. This is just me personally. Chad may feel otherwise, but for me, part of the reason why we're doing the podcast is we want to tell you what it means for you, the listener, to receive all of this political information. And the first thing that comes to mind for me is it's important to know what the current laws are and the consequences for those laws. Because if you have that information, you can know what the pros and the cons are. You can know what can be done to remedy the cons, and if there should be anything done, because sometimes you just can't remedy those cons. And as a result, you can actually have a voice by being more politically informed. Chad, what else do you think may
benefit the viewer?
Yeah.
So just kind of reiterating what Will said, the whole point of the podcast is to inform our listeners more about what they can know about their, like where they fall politically, or really just how to understand laws in general. And we try to present it in a simple way where you can understand it, so that there's like not too much confusion or anything like that. And that's what's most important to us, is that you're understanding the laws that we're talking about and you're able to make a logical decision on what to do next after you receive that information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what most of the viewers would find beneficial out of this podcast, is how to really dissect the information that we present them with.
Mm-hmm. I also think there are a couple of practical ways that you guys can actually make a difference with this information. The first thing with the information that you can do is just really open your mouth. You want to be vocal about this, because if you close your mouth and you don't even have conversations, then you're not going to actually be able to make a difference. But you want to open your mouth in a productive way. You don't want to call people dumb for their opinions. You don't want to think that they're idiots for what they believe, because that's not going to get you anywhere at all. But you can open your mouth to your representatives, because they're the ones who have the voting power in Congress. So if you have ideas for laws, or if you have suggestions for laws, then you can just tell them, and they're the ones who bring it up, who votes for it. But those things don't happen if you don't actually talk to the people who are responsible for making those changes. So that's the first thing that you can do, is open your mouth. And the second thing is what is called in political science is voting with your feet. So in this specific instance of political information on social media platforms, if you don't like what's going on in one place, you move to another place. So if you don't like what's going on Facebook or Twitter, and I'm not saying to move from those platforms at all, I'm just giving an example. But if you don't like what's going on those platforms, then move to platforms where you think is actually going to be beneficial for your conversation, that upholds the values that you actually care about. And Twitter and Facebook might have those values, and you move from other platforms to and be on those platforms as well. But so those are the two main things. Open your mouth, talk to your representatives, and move with your feet to actually vote with your feet to make those differences in person.
Perfect. So that concludes this episode of Two Man Congress. Thank you for listening. Also, if you want to support us, we got a Patreon. It's really great. So
yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will likely post our next episode in a couple of weeks. So we'll see you then.
All right. We'll see you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is, if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't our pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice. And with that, the fourth thing is, if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, law schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.